and welcome to the Transcontinental Daily Podcast, Episode 9. I'm Karen Tosti, and I'm joined, as usual, by TCR veteran Rob Quirk and also esteemed TCR previous winner Josh Ibbett. Good evening.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
How's it going?
Thanks for joining us, Josh.
I feel esteemed.
Yes. We've had a lot of esteemed people.
Very esteemed guests.
I thought I was special. No.
You're the most esteemed, don't worry.
Oh, thanks.
So, Josh, what have you made of this year's race so far?
Oh, it's been pretty exciting, isn't it? I think the last two or three days have, you know, really developed into a really quite exciting battle. I think the two guys out front, Adam and Ulrich, well, my impression is they thought they probably had it between them. But then Christoph has kind of been lurking in the background the whole way, and he's kind of gradually crept up, and then he seems to have pounced. So it looks like he's run a very sensible and strategic race. And yeah, the others are basically just smashed the crap out of each other, and he's taken advantage. So he's going to see. Well, it looks like he might have got it sewn up now. He's managed to get across the river, because you have to take a ferry, or one of three ferries, and he's made it. So looks like he might be home and dry, providing he has no sort of major issues. But the rest looks like there might be a bit of a scrap tomorrow.
Yeah, it's a pretty interesting situation developing. So in the last pod, we were talking about the tight race between those top three, and they were all out on the gravel parkour just after control point four when we last spoke. And as you've said just there, they've since had the dash down to the Danube in the south of Romania. Christoph has made it over the river. But Rob, what's the kind of, beyond that, what's the picture currently as we're speaking?
Well, things have got very, very interesting. We're in a unique position, so we do get fed information from the ground. As it happens. So yeah, as we've seen, there's been a dash for the Danube. Christoph, having made that dash before everyone else, has managed to bag himself a ferry and to get across. There's three ferry crossings for those who don't know, and they run on limited timetables, and none of them run through the night. But the most westerly ferry runs the latest. So we've seen Ulrich making his way for that ferry, and then Adam going for the ferry furthest east. Ulrich did make it to Beschet, which is the westerly ferry, only to find out that it's not running at the moment. So, yeah. Now Adam and Ulrich are stranded on the north side of the Danube, and they have to wait until morning until they can catch a ferry. I think the first ferry is,
I think 8 p.m., 8 a.m. rather.
Yes. Yeah. 8 a.m. at Turno and 8:30 at Zemnisia, which I think it looks like Adam's heading for the Zemnisia, which is the furthest east, because it will place him closer to the finish. So it might start a bit later, but he'll get him there. Of course, I mean, this is super tragic for Ulrich. Apparently there were tears to be had. Obviously very upset, but it does look like he's now making his way back east to one of the other ferry terminals. But of course, he's going to have to wait out the night. And it's more than likely the chasing pack is going to catch up with them. So it's going to be an interesting day tomorrow.
Yeah, it's interesting developments. And I think it looks like Ulrich now has got about an 80-kilometre ride eastwards along the Danube to get to the next ferry port along at Turnu, as you've said. And then it would be another 80 kilometres further along east if you wanted to join Adam, where Adam is that takes the slightly shorter route to the finish in Burgas once you've crossed the Danube. So we'd assume Ulrich's gonna just do that first 80 kilometers, get a bit of sleep, and then catch the 8 a.m. ferry in the morning.
That's probably going to feel like the longest 80K of this race for him, I'd imagine.
This is a test, isn't it? This is the real test. I mean, they thought they were being tested last night in the conditions on the park, or having been caught by Christoph. But, you know, this is where the old head gets a real... It's not about the body now, you know. Yeah.
I think that's the thing. He will have thought after such a difficult night up on the park, or issues with his rims, he would have thought, you know, the getting to the ferry port is the kind of the moment of safety where everything's kind of back in control a bit. So it must just be absolutely crushing to have got there and found out the ferry's not running. As we understand, it's not running essentially because the water level's too low at that crossing at the moment. So, yeah.
So it's not running at all.
It's not running at all since, I think it was the 26th of July or something like that. So it's a relatively recent change. I guess actually that's, if I'm correct, maybe it stopped running since the race has started. So
there's no way to really sort of
it's really understandable that no one's checked that since they've left.
Hmm. It'd be interesting to see, you know, what effect it has on Ulrich. If the others catch him, is he going to have any fight left in him to race it out and try and secure the podium, which... You know, rightfully, he probably should be on the podium. I think the three strongest guys are quite obvious, but you know, it's going to be mentally quite shattering. Can he pull it together, or are the other guys going to be so buoyed by catching him? You know, is there going to be a mad rush from the people behind and, you know, lose out totally? I could almost see him finishing, you know, fifth or sixth if he's not, you know, able to really kind of force himself into the right mindset for that final day.
Yeah, so I think the issue for the chasing pack behind is if they're going to get to those first ferries, they've got to push on quite a lot. So they, even though Ulrich is just going to have to ride an extra 80 kilometres, he should hopefully have a bit more time for rest than the others that are chasing down from coming off the parkour in the north. Tom kindly did some quick calculations for us, so I can't take credit for this, but Tom's looked at Christoph's times from today, essentially, and it took Christoph about 13 hours of riding to get from the end of the parkour down to the river. It's about 250 kilometres. So that means anyone who finished the parkour tonight at around 7 p.m. could be in with a chance of making that first ferry in the morning, providing they've kind of got the legs and are well rested enough to ride straight down to the south. So just looking at the chasing pack and when they've come through control point four today. So Pavel came through at 8:15 a.m. followed by Robin and Christian basically together at 9:20 a.m. Then Marin at 12:24 and Fiona at 5:15. So probably it's going to be a bit of a stretch for Fiona to make that first ferry because those times are for coming through control point four, not for coming off the parkour. But you'd think the other four are in with a good chance of pushing on through and getting that first ferry in the morning. So it's going to be very exciting to see what it looks like in the morning. Have either of you been in positions like that before where you've got to kind of push through to catch a ferry or some kind of deadline in a race, mid-race?
Not really, from my point of view. Any ferries or anything has always been quite early on. I do wonder sometimes whether it's obviously going to make it very exciting from our point of view, but does it have a negative effect overall for the races? I guess maybe front end, mid-pack, it probably doesn't make so much of a difference because they're stopping longer at night anyway. But yeah, it's going to make it excited. I mean, it's still all to race for, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, when the race finished in Chinakly and it was essentially the ferry to the finish, And if you were on the same ferry, I think you got the same position, but whoever arrived at the ferry port first got the better time. So you get the same placement, but a different time. So you've done it quicker, but you got joint eighth or whatever. I think it was that way around. Or was it the other way? Did you get whoever got there first got the place, but you got the same time? So really the only way, if you wanted to jump ahead of someone decisively, it was to get to the ferry first, get on the ferry, and then hope that ferry pulls into the finish before anyone else arrives. That was quite interesting.
In this instance, though, they basically got to almost ride across half a country anyway, so
yeah,
it's not exactly a sprint finish, is it? And
it's very easy to lose track of distances, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's just a hop, skip, and a drunk. It's only half of Bulgaria. It'll be, they'll be there in a blink.
We're saying it's 13 hours from the end of the parkour to the ferry, and it looks like approximately the same distance.
Yeah.
I think we forget when people have been riding for however many days it's been now. I've lost track of how many days the race is on for.
Eight.
But 8 days. I mean,
this is the ninth.
Yeah, so still, it's going to be a nearly 10-day race, isn't it? And 12 hours is still quite a long time, even though you're looking at it in the contents of this race. If you had to go out for a 12-hour bike ride right now, you wouldn't be fresh when you finished. So I still can change a lot. And even if someone does get a ferry after these guys, what if they're just totally cracked by it mentally? You know, they still could. If someone behind is really on it and really chasing, because it's easier to chase than be ahead, I think.
Yeah.
You know, it's like Marin's on a charge. He could potentially, you either do the charge now and you're on fumes, or you can still save a little bit and maybe you might be able to squeeze something out right at the end. But I don't think we'll see a sprint finish in ultra racing. Well, apart from maybe a few exceptions. It's not exactly a Tour de France sprint finish, is it? It's more of a slog, and basically your gap's going to be, who's going to have to go and stop for lunch on the way?
Yeah. I did have a question. Sorry, I did have a question for you, Josh. Have you been in a similar situation to Ulrich where, you've had a really bad turn of events? That you feel like you're striking out, you're onto a good thing, and then something happens to really scupper your race. And
probably not quite as devastating as it seems like Ulrich's had a bit of a run, hasn't he? Everything seems to be going wrong to a certain extent. I got bit by a dog once and ended up in hospital, but that's kind of slightly different. Not massively. I mean, you have to bear in mind as well, it looks quite a big deal for us here, sat in the comfort of our own homes. But, sometimes even when you're in a race and you're a week in and you get to a shop and it's shut, it's like the end of the world. So imagine what Ulrich feels like right now. It's probably going to feel like a hell of a lot bigger deal than it actually is.
Yeah.
And he's probably not just, it's very hard to rationally think about these things sometimes. Because in the grand scheme of things, he's probably all right. He's got to do another 80K ride, get to the other ferry, and the chances are he could squeeze ahead of the others, and he's been riding faster than them anyway, so he should be able to get to the finish. But is he going to think clearly like that, given the fatigue, given the tiredness, given the run of bad luck? Because it's quite easy to mentally implode.
Well, that's the thing that I think has really stood out about Ulrich, is how philosophical he's been. All his quotes, he's always been quite level-headed, and he seems to always have this ability to see things in quite a positive way, I found. So yeah, it'd be interesting.
Yeah, I do wonder though, he's never been really pushed that hard in races. It's been so good that he got used to being so good, and now he's been challenged the whole way. He's been fighting against adversity the whole way. Are the cracks starting to show now? I'm sure it's going to make him a much stronger rider, which is quite worrying, in all honesty, from a racing point of view. But is this going to really just, there's only so many lessons you can learn from winning. Sometimes you learn your biggest lessons from a bit of adversity. So he might find, or we might find, he gets even faster as a result of it.
I mean, he's been complaining of knee pain since practically day one, and I've heard a few clips of him talking about it, and it sounds like it's been pretty bad. So to have been managing that both physically and mentally the whole way, seemingly not letting it get to his performance, he must be made of pretty strong stuff mentally. But yeah, maybe this is the final straw. He's moving. He looks like he's moving, though. So
yeah. Well, fair play to him. I mean, I think we can sit here and analyze it and talk about people's psyche who we've never really properly met, and but they're still there and they're still moving, and you can't take that away from anyone. Even just, you know, I know we're focusing on the top part of the race, but you have to remember the guys in the middle of the pack. Everyone's having these things. It's just the spotlight's not on them so much. So you just have to keep it in context, don't you? So, well, good on Ulrich for keeping going, especially as he's been, you know, injured for so long. And it seems like he's had a rough time of it.
Okay, so the scratch report for today, we've got Will Felsden, number 214. Will actually broke his frame in Germany, and he's been riding it all the way right into, I think he made it into Romania, was he on Dermatur? And yeah, he moved the frame bag to see that almost his entire down tube had a crack in it. So he's had to pull out because he can't ride no more.
Did he actually know it was cracked? Or did he just find out in Romania? Or has he been monitoring
it? I think he just found out.
I think it sounded like he started descending the Transalpina descent and noticed that his bike was handling really weirdly. So he stopped to have a look. And that's when he saw it.
I'm glad he found that, because that would have been scary.
There's a lot of hairpins on that road.
Yeah. Okay, well, and carrying on with the scratches, we've got Yikin Fu, 193, Mark Haggerts, 89, Rita Nykanen, 38, Jan Mikian, 134, Robert Walker, 66, Sue Lee, 40, Kevin Stewart, 150. And all the pairs are still in the race. So, what's next, Karen?
Do we want to have a quick look at... we pulled out a couple of social media posts. One of them was actually from Will about his broken frame, but we've maybe covered that one. But there's another really important theme emerging on social media. I mean, it's been emerging since day one, but there seems to be a lot of ice cream back on Instagram. So Matt Falconer, for example, cap number five, seems to have had...
is he actually running?
Is he counting his ice creams? Is he counting his ice creams? Is that what's going on?
He's had 38 ice creams.
I think if he did more pedalling and less ice cream shopping, he would be much faster. That's all I've seen. He's having a good time, it looks like.
So the question for that is then, how important is ice cream on the TCR? What's this all about?
Energy in, bike forward, I guess.
And it's is there a special quality about ice cream that makes you go forward a bit more than other things?
Can we have your race summary though, Josh? Energy in, bike forward.
And that's it, isn't it?
Yeah.
And if you like, I mean, he's obviously a connoisseur of ice cream. So, I mean, why not have a hobby while you're racing the TCR? I mean, it gives him something to think about. I mean, I'm sure he's thinking about the next ice cream all the time. And
maybe it's actually planned his route, you know. Great ice cream stops.
How many is that a day? That's a significant number of ice creams a day.
I mean, judging by my Instagram,
that's five.
Is a lot.
Almost five.
And I'm impressed because, normally you just get in the groove and buy the same old ones, but he's you know, his varieties of spice of life, and he's even been reviewing them for you as well. So, you know, it's a valued source.
Amazing.
Like public service at the same time.
So I think conclusion is ice cream is very important on TCR, but most important if you're Matt Falconer, a bit less important for the rest of us.
Yes. Nice summary.
Oh. Although I'm disappointed. I mean, if he was super prepared, he would have taken a spoon and just be eating out the tub on the front of his bike. So, I mean, I don't know if you're listening, Matt, but, you know, come on, up your game. You've got some time left.
All right, let's move on to listener questions. So we've got a couple of questions here that we've pulled out. Thanks everyone for sending in your questions. And today we've got a little focus on the media side of things. So we've got a question and a comment first from Justin Pitts, Dot Watcher, aspiring volunteer and eventual participant. So Justin says, with the TCR, we have so much technology at our disposal, and yet the coverage is at the same time limited and also incredibly personal in nature. As spectators, we watch slowly moving dots on the map while piecing together stories from the Lost Dot crew, other dot watchers, and the racers themselves when they choose to share often incredibly vulnerable moments of their journeys. More and more, I found myself appreciating the lack of live coverage or of camera crews following riders for future documentaries. It seems as though this coverage in the form of tweets from the crew and the riders, photographs from the crew and other snips of information that the TCR gives the world is the special sauce that makes it so incredibly moving, personal and romantic. So my question, says Justin, is how much of this is by design? And then his comment is, please don't change. In my mind, this is what makes your event so incredibly captivating. So it might be that we need to put this question to Tom, Anna and others in the race team. But I don't know, Rob and Josh, if either of you have any insight into that.
Well, I'd say one of the reasons probably there isn't, whether by design or not, one of the reasons that there isn't as much kind of inverted commas live coverage or more stuff come out is because it's incredibly hard to chase a bike rider across the continent. You don't appreciate how fast these riders actually cover ground. And chasing in a car isn't easy. I mean, it's a great advertisement for traveling by bike, because actually you do cover a hell of a lot of ground, and you have to be very strategic and wait around a lot to catch people. And then you're only there for an instant. So I think it'll always be like this to a certain extent. And I think, you know, there's quite sort of strict media coverage around TCR. Otherwise, I think it might be a bit of a free-for-all. But I think the nature of it, I mean, even if there was a film crew, I think the personal aspect, you know, the social media, all of that kind of thing is, you know, in the podcasts, I think you let a lot more of your emotions out on that. It's easy to put a front up when there's a camera in your face. But you can't hide, you know, maybe to a certain extent in the early days, but by the end of it, you can't hide on your social media. And when someone shoves a microphone in your face, or you just happen to be at a checkpoint and someone's recording, you know, you're always going to be, you're at your limit. There is no hiding, even if you try.
Yeah, I mean, I can only think of one time, I mean, I can't think of any live video coverage ever on one of these races. And the nearest I think TCR got was in 2016 when Francis Cade did a daily vlog. And that was fun. I really enjoyed that, you know, because you did get this little video snippet of what was going on through the day. I mean, this year, I think, is the first year that TCR's had an actual full-time media manager. Is that the right word? So Steph from Panier is, you know, covering the media, doing the Instagram, the Twitter. And I think that's made it a really great race to follow this year, because there's maybe a more consistent level of posting and a nice voice coming through there. And he's been really good at like picking up on what's going on at the front, but also pulling out these strands. And I think also us doing the podcast, we're not live, but we're as current as you can get, I think. And doing the commentary, or a lot of people have fed back on that. So, and of course the other podcast with the documentary. So yeah, I mean, we're as live as you can get it, isn't it? Beyond, you're actually watching the dot and following people's social media.
Well, we're watching the dots at the same time. We're doing the same as everyone else.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, literally, as we're recording, we're changing what we're saying and where we're placing the emphasis. Yeah, and he's right. It is what makes it magic, because you're having to piece this together. You can't just turn on Eurosport and watch it happening. You have to do your own detective work to know what's going on the ground.
Good stuff. So I think then last question is from Anonymous Squirrel. Make of that what you will. Anonymous Squirrel says, my question is about your experiences of the media coverage during the race, especially as you've now been on both sides of it. How does it feel to have a photographer or podcaster pop up out of nowhere or sidle up and start photographing you at a control point? Are you aware of the images of yourself and others appearing during the race?
When I finished in 2015, I had James Robertson in the bathroom with me about 2 a.m. I was like, just sod off, will you? But I guess it's part of it. You know, it's...
Was that to do with the race, or...?
Well, I don't know. I've not seen any photos of it, so yeah. Yeah, that was after the finish in Istanbul. But I think you sign up for it, don't you? You know, there's a form you probably have to sign to say that you're a willing participant in having your image used. And I guess it's part of it. And there's a lot of sponsored riders now as well. You have to remember that. So it's kind of part and parcel to be seen to a certain extent. You know, I think the sport is turning not truly professional, but more and more people are doing it full time. Just look at the front of the race. Christoph's pro, has been for years. I think Ulrich's riding full time. You know, there's a few, you know, I'm sort of riding full time now. So there's a few people, you know, Sofiane, James Hayden. So we're getting there, and it's going to change it a little bit. And with that, you do need to have some exposure. But there's a way to do it, you know, and I think a race like the TCR, you can't go around trying to, you know, make sure you get photos taken of you. It's going to happen at some point.
Mm-hmm.
And by the end of it, you don't really care, to be honest. you just want to be left alone half the time.
What about you, Rob? What's been your experience?
I always enjoyed it because...
Me too.
It's kind of like when a dot watcher appears out of nowhere and they cheer you on. You do get a little mental boon. Like when I was doing Atlas Mountain, and like Atlas Mountain, you're literally, there's nothing around you. You're cycling and it's hot, you know, really oppressive, the heat. And then you might hear like the wheels of the truck coming down the road ahead of you or whatever, or you turn the corner, the podcaster, again, another Stefan was there. And it was just always a really nice thing, because you could be like, oh, hey, how's it going? And you'd have this little, I guess, something that just broke up the day. Sometimes it's nice to get out of your head.
I think it depends how many ice creams you eat, though, because if you've not managed to get an ice cream and you're quite grumpy, yeah, it can go the other way. There's that classic photo of Becky Waters that James took, just swearing at him. Cracks me up.
I mean, I'm sure Matthew Faulkner doesn't have that problem.
Well, he's on a massive sugar high the whole time. So. Yeah.
Never knowingly without ice cream.
I mean, when he gets home, he's going to suffer. He's not going to be able to like live without sugar.
Amazing.
Just to add in from my side, I think Rob, I'm in your camp. I always found it a massive boost when, for example, James Robertson pops out from behind a bush as you're riding up a dark road in the middle of the night, wondering where on earth the control point is. it always kind of it was a nice boost when you're feeling low or you just haven't seen anyone for days. Seeing someone who's to do with the race, possibly even someone that you've seen at another point of the race as well. So I really enjoyed it. And then I think it was also nice to have those images from that you can look back on once you finish the race, to kind of remind you of moments that you probably wiped from your memory. So I think for me, that was a really awesome part of the race, how well documented it was. I was totally oblivious of actually the images during the race. I had no idea what was happening to them. I wasn't really looking at social media or anything. But
you're in your own sort of dream world, aren't you, half the time?
Yeah.
And sometimes you don't even realise till after, and you see these incredible landscapes. Then you see a rider in them, and you're like, oh, that's me. don't really remember it quite like that, because you see it in your own sort of end of TCR kind of view, don't you, which is probably not reality. And the truth is as well, they've always had some like incredible photographers on the race crew, so I don't think there's any bad images of the TCR.
I'm always, of course, part of reason I got into ultra cycling was also as a way of designing bikes and promoting my company. So part of me has to be on the ball when it comes to any media that might be out there, because if I'm not posting it, no one else will be. So yeah, I have to be a little, it's sometimes hard because sometimes you just want to race and not think about that. But on the other hand, it's kind of like, oh yeah, this is how I make a living. So yeah.
So eat another ice cream and crack on.
Yeah.
Josh, quick last question for you. What does it feel like to be leading the TCR, and how does it feel once you've crossed the finish line and realised that you have indeed won?
Well, my situation is probably slightly different to the current situation, because it was me and James Hayden. We had a relatively big gap over the rest of the field, but I knew James was injured and I was behind him, and I passed him by accident, actually. I didn't even realise I'd passed him. So I was actually, half the time I was leading, I was still chasing James, even though he was way behind me. So I didn't actually know. And then suddenly I was leading, and it was a relatively substantial gap because James had to scratch, because he had Sherman's neck. So then I was just leading by almost 20 hours in like an instant, because the guy who was third was quite a way back. So to be honest, the race for me was in the sort of, you know, the third quarter of the event. That's when I felt I was really racing for it, and then suddenly I was just way out ahead. I guess in a kind of similar situation to Christoph at the moment, and then you just have to get there, and then it's slightly different because you haven't got that pressure from behind so much, because you know you've got such a big gap that you're not going to get caught. And then it's yours to lose. So that's a slightly interesting kind of dynamic and a change in your mindset. And then you're battling yourself. And then you're still very tired because you've ridden all that way. And you can question what you're doing. You can get angry, can not eat enough ice cream, and get a bit hangry as well, which, you know, it happened to me. I think probably 12 hours out from the finish, I was probably quite a horrible person. So it's a good job there was no one there.
Because you're so focused on the finish line that you forget to look after yourself and fuel in the way that you've been doing throughout?
Possibly, yeah. But then, yeah, and I think just the lack of, the motivation of being pushed from behind isn't there. And then you realise all you've got to do is ride to the finish line. And you're at the border of Turkey and it's still bloody miles away. You know, it's still a really long way, even though you've ridden all that distance. Even 100 miles is still a really long bike ride, and it takes ages. Yeah. And you think you're nearly there, but it just drags and drags and drags. Mm. So then it's just relief to finish. And then everyone wants a piece of you, and you just want a bit of peace and quiet. So it's like, yeah, it's not like I don't know. For me, it was almost sad to finish because I'd been by myself for best part of a week, not really seen anyone outside of the checkpoints. I hadn't seen another rider really on the road apart from the first day. And then suddenly there's everyone and they all want to just ask you loads of questions. And it's like 1 a.m. you just want to go to bed, not be hassled.
Yeah.
Do you find it a bit of an anti-climax?
Oh, massively. I always felt that I was never, like, I'm really proud of the win of winning now, but at the time it didn't really bother me too much, if you know what I mean, because I kind of did the journey. It's a bit of a cliche, but it's all about the journey in a lot of respects. And there's only one person that's going to win it. But that journey is still very similar to the one that everyone else has had. The other 200 odd people that have done that same journey. You're all on the same sort of emotional roller coaster. You're having the same problems. You're having the same, you know, mental kind of battles, the same parkour. I mean, the leaders have been going over that funnel parkour, saying how horrific it is. So what the guy is going to think at the back of the pack when they get there, you know, it's almost easier to win almost and do it fast because, I mean, it's a long addition again. I think mine was 10 days, just under. This is going to be 9 and a bit, 10 days. That's a long time on a bike and that's the winner. So imagine what everyone else feels like, you know, it's going to be tough and you're just relieved to finish, you know. For me, it was winning was secondary at the time because I was just so happy not to be on my bike because I could barely sit down. I was like, knees are sore, everything's sore, fed off of 7-day croissants.
Yeah.
You know, and then you get there and then it's just like everyone everywhere and it's probably even bigger now. You know, that was edition 3. Look how big the race is now.
I think also the whole... You spend a lot of time training, thinking about it, preparing, and then you spend a lot of time on the road. And I always find when you finish these events, it's just like, oh, that was it. It's over now. And you've had so much of yourself focused on that point. And then when it comes, it's just really like...
It's abrupt, isn't it?
Yeah, it's
stop heading, and that's that.
Yeah, what do you expect? Yeah,
it's not like you're winning a sprint finish of the Tour de France or a mountain stage, and everyone's cheering you the whole way up. And, you know, you cross the line with your arms in the air, just stop, and there's a few people there. Well, there might be quite a few people now, but it's at some like cafe or something. Well, it might be different now. It was
underwhelming and incredibly overwhelming.
Yeah,
I imagine.
Yeah.
I got handed a beer and it was like I hadn't drank at all, you know, the whole time of training, so I hadn't had a beer in 6 months. So I was like, great, a beer, and like drank this beer and it was like just instantly, you know, like super drunk because it's like, oh, I've not drank in ages and my body is pretty much falling apart. But it was like, that was it. It was like, well done, here's a beer, and everyone walked off. Cool.
I think the best finish is probably like Tour Divide because you just get to the middle of nowhere and there's absolutely nothing. And when I finished it in 2019, there was no one. And you just sit on the curb next to this sign that's in a crappy border crossing. And it's just peace and quiet. Like, oh, it's perfect. Like no one's taking your photo. No one's there at all. Till you realise you can't get back 70 miles.
Got to ride home.
Yeah.
The reluctant celebrity that you are, Josh.
No, it's a bit of a hassle sometimes, but can't complain, really. Serves me right for bloody winning, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, you could have taken a different route. It's self-inflicted.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I can't speak. I was actually thinking I'd love to go back again now. I've been thinking about it for a few years, but it'd be interesting. I reckon I could only just... maybe scrape a top 5 if I was lucky now. It'd be interesting to see the difference in how much the sport's come on.
Oh, well, I think that's obviously a lead-in to next year's event, you know? maybe the listeners at
it's
home.
It's on record. You might be held to that.
I don't even know if I'm an entry now. It's not as simple as just entering anymore, is it?
They might not think you've got the credentials.
Yeah, I remember the first one. That was brilliant. I did 2014 or whatever it was. Like, Mike, can I come and do your race? Yeah, sure. Okay, great. I was like, oh, I haven't got any money for Tractorbot. Oh, I was okay. Well, I know who you are, so just give it back. Brilliant. It's not quite the same anymore, but there we go. I might fill in an application. I'll see how I feel about it.
Nice.
Exciting. I think it's time for my dinner, so let's wrap this episode up, I reckon.
What have you got? Ice cream?
Yeah, just a tub of ice cream, basically. Josh, thanks so much for joining us this evening. It's been really great to have you in the conversation, get your insight, and yeah, thanks a lot.
No problem at all. Thanks for asking me.
And thanks, Rob, as always.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
And we'll see everyone, I guess, this time tomorrow, and we'll know what's happened with the Danube crossing. Very exciting. Just before we sign off, just to let you know, don't forget you can still send in any questions about the TCR to chat so that we can chat about them in the upcoming episode. So if you've got any questions, send them in to race@transcontinental.cc with pod question as the subject. Thanks very much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe, leave a rating and review, and we'll see you back here tomorrow.
This podcast is supported by our race partners, Apidura, Physique, Hutchinson, Kinesis, Komoot, LEM Helmets, and Pedaled. All the music has been created for this series by Joe Skinner.